Kia ora and welcome to Emrin's Podcast, episode 164. Today is Wednesday, July 8th, 2009. Welcome, welcome. Things are back to normal. Well, how normal can it be when I'm sitting here talking into a microphone, recording a file that will be downloaded by people all over the world? How normal is that? But all things considered, I think it is pretty normal. This is, of course, the busiest work week of the month for me, and so you're probably asking yourself, I wonder how Arthur finds time to podcast. Well, the reason is because I'm ahead of schedule, and so I have a few minutes to spare. So I thought, why not do my updates that I've been putting off? I've got some general updates, and I also have sort of a Pride 48 wrap-up, which includes a special feature, but I'll talk about that a little bit later. First up today, I actually have a topic, and it's about migrating to New Zealand as a worker on a work permit slash visa. And the reason I'm going to talk about that today is because it's been in the news. But first, I should back up a bit and explain what that is. It's essentially a way of getting into New Zealand if you can't get in any other way. For instance, permanent residence, you can apply overseas, and if you have the correct number of points, then you can apply for permanent residence, and if it's granted, you can come and live in New Zealand like anybody else. There are other categories as well. There's an investor category, business investor, I think it's called. It keeps changing names. But that requires a heck of a lot of money. It's $5 million, I can't remember. It's a lot of money that you have to invest in New Zealand. And that's obviously not for everyone. There's also a family category. If you already have relatives here and they're your only relatives, then sometimes you can be sponsored by the relatives who are here. And there's other categories as well. But for a lot of people, and I was one of them, the easiest way to get into New Zealand was on a work permit and visa. And in my case, it was because the number of points required for permanent residence was raised just before I lodged my application, which means that I went from qualifying to not qualifying in an instant. So what I did is I found a job here in New Zealand, and an employer hired me and was willing to sort of wait out the process for getting the work permit and work visa and all that. I had to leave the country in order to apply, which is kind of interesting. So I went back to the U.S. and applied, and I got it a few weeks later. So I was back in New Zealand in about 5 weeks, which is a pretty long time for an employer to wait, if you stop to think about it. But it was an easy way for me to get in. And my work permits and visas are usually pretty short term. I don't think they're ever longer than 2 years, but they're usually a year at a time. And they're renewable, as mine was, of course. And after 2 years, I think it's 2 years, you qualify to apply for permanent residence in New Zealand. And if successful, of course, then you can stay indefinitely and work for whoever you want. But one of the catches of these work permits and visas is that you can only work for the company that has sponsored you. Essentially, it's a sponsored visa. Now, I used to call it indentured servitude because I was only able to, and people under the scheme were only able to stay in New Zealand as long as they're employed by the company. And that's where the news comes in. Because of the economic downturn, unemployment is rising, companies are letting people go, and New Zealand's unemployment rate has hit about 5%, which is the highest in years. But it's about half of the U.S.'s, so it's still pretty good. But some of the people who are caught in this have been people who entered New Zealand on the work permit slash visa program. When they're made redundant, which is what it's called here when you let go in downsizing or whatever, you don't qualify for unemployment compensation or anything like that. So your first resort, obviously, is your savings. And once the savings are gone, you have to rely on charity or leave the country. Those are your options, essentially. Generally speaking, there isn't a time limit for how long you've got to find another job before you have to leave. However, the problem is that it's taking immigration up to 5 weeks to process these applications. And most companies aren't willing to wait 5 weeks for somebody. Now, there was an article in the Daily Mail in Britain, which is pretty sensational under the best of circumstances, and this article was no different. It alleged that there was a Jobs for Kiwis program going on, some dark thing like they're trying not to hire, well, in this case, Britons. Well, it's true, but it's not the way they make it sound. In order to get a work permit and work visa approved in the first place, the Department of Labor has to satisfy the Immigration Service that there is nobody in New Zealand who can or is willing to do that particular job, which isn't as hard as it might sound, because especially if you want to live, say, in a small town and they need somebody, nobody wants to go there, well, you know, chances are you'll be able to be sponsored for that job. But it does mean that they have to satisfy the government that they've tried to find somebody in New Zealand. They haven't been able to find a citizen or permanent resident, and that gives them the ability then to look for somebody from overseas. It's always been that way. It's nothing new, and it's not been affected at all by the current economic situation. The government does have a scheme they call the Skilled Migrant Program, where they deliberately go out and try to bring in people under this scheme for areas where there are skills shortages. And it's supposed, I believe, it's supposed to fast-track people toward permanent residence as well, although I could be wrong about that part. But some of these people who've been made redundant are in this Skilled Migrant Program, and some of them are in short-term visas, and they've been told they've got 21 days to find a job or leave the country, apparently. This is all in the news media. I don't know this from any first-hand experience. Nobody's told me this. So some people are really caught in a difficult situation because they lose their job, and what do you do? You know, if you've packed up your whole family, moved to New Zealand from, say, Britain or the U.S., you know, you've got all of your – you've got your family here. You've got all your possessions here. You lose your job. Then you have to decide, well, are you going to try to find another job and persevere through the system, or are you just going to pack up and move back to where you came from? Do you have the money to do that? If you have money saved, how long can you last before you're desperate? So, you know, some of these people have to make a decision between just moving, cutting their losses and moving back to where they came from, or trying to use their savings instead to try to survive until they can find another job. Now, there are immigrant organizations, migrant organizations, that are trying to work with the government or trying to get the government to work faster. It's probably more accurate. And the thing is that migrants on these schemes, the work permit, visa, or the skilled migrant program, they're not just run-of-the-mill immigrants. They're not just people, you know, from some poor country who come with no skills and they're barely eking by. These are people who have skills that are needed in New Zealand, obviously, or they wouldn't have gotten the permit in the first place. And so these are valuable people to have. And it doesn't seem right to me that so many of these people are being caught in this vice between the bureaucracy of the immigration service on the one hand and the relatively soft job market on the other. And I certainly hope that the government does something about that. I know, as I said, that there are organizations working on it, and I'll certainly keep you posted about that. But it is kind of a bad situation at the moment. When I was on a work permit visa, the company I was working for closed down, and this was in a booming economy, so that wasn't really an issue itself. But because I couldn't transfer to a different employer, and I would have to find one who would be willing to employ me for a time, I was just on a tourist visa. But as it happens, that was right at the end of the amount of time it was before I could apply for permanent residence, and I did, and got the permanent residence, and then I could work for anybody just like a citizen can. So one of the problems, though, is that if they are near the end of their work permit slash visa, they can convert it to a tourist visa, as I did, probably, but they wouldn't be able to work, and they have to be able to survive until they qualify for permanent residence, which they might not even get after all that. So I really feel for these people, and I certainly hope that the situation is resolved quickly, and, of course, that the economy picks up. Everybody wants that. So that's sort of the news item today. Now, I have a few little odds and ends to go over about Pride 48. And I'm mostly going to do that through the comments. But before that, just a few little odds and ends. I had a dream the other night, and which I suppose isn't unusual, but it is unusual for me to remember it. And what was strange about it was that I must have been waking up and hearing something on the radio and just obviously didn't register, because in my dream, Matthew from Spanking Bee Arthur was ranting about Robert McNamara, who, of course, had just died. He was using all sorts of swearing and carrying on. And it was the most bizarre thing, because, I mean, it wasn't what I expected. And I also certainly didn't expect to be dreaming about Matthew. Not that I wouldn't, just it hasn't happened before. But I also know that just before I went to bed, I was listening to Matthew, so that's probably why it was him, and Robert McNamara was because it was on the radio news when I was waking up. But it was just strange, and it was especially kind of funny because there's been a lot of talk about dreams lately. Those of you who did participate in Pride 48 or listen to my two podcasts with Nigel probably heard me mention Stephen from Wisconsin having a dream in which I was a superhero, Captain Kiwi, and the name sort of stuck. So some people now call me Captain Kiwi, or just Captain. But, yeah, so I sort of joined the dreaming crowd, I guess you could say. But in order to talk about Pride 48, I'm going to go over to the comments, but sort of a general preface. We both had a really good time. Nigel enjoyed himself, and he said to me that he would quite like to do it again, which is surprising in itself because it took me well over a year, better part of 2 years, to get him to record with me again, to podcast with me again. But he said that he prefers the live stream version of the podcast much more than sitting and talking into a microphone with me. He says he finds it easier to do and, I don't know, less artificial, I suppose. So that's something we hope to do at some stage, but I don't think that he would be willing to commit to any sort of schedule. So we'll have to sort of play it by ear. The only thing I do know is that he wants to do it when more people in North America are likely to be awake, because that's where most of my listeners are, in North America. So that's what he would prefer. But he would also like it to be late enough so that those who wish to partake in alcohol can feel free to do so, and it could be, you know, sort of a party sort of atmosphere. But I'll certainly keep you up to date about that as best I can. But now over on the comments. The first one was actually from Roger Green, but it was about Sunday, so I'll skip over that for the minute and go on to Ramble Redhead, who said, "Great hearing you both and being able to be part of the show despite the Skype issues. You two are amazing." Well, thanks, Tom. Yes, for those of you who haven't heard the Saturday show, we tried to have a Skype conversation with Tom the Ramble Redhead, and we just had major Skype issues, and unfortunately that didn't work out. But there's always another time. And of course, Ramble is doing a series of live podcasts on the Pride 48 stream as well. So you never know, we might show up on that one day. Hey, Tom. And he also left another comment and said, "Forgot to add that Indiana is backwards when it comes to booze. You're not allowed to buy any on Sunday." And he says, "Best line of the show, what do you call a blowjob in New Zealand?" "A blowjob." That was probably one of my favorites of that episode as well. But it used to actually be similar here in New Zealand, that you, or large parts of it. No, I guess the entire country. You couldn't buy alcohol except in a bar or pub or club or restaurant or at a winery. Those were the only places you could get alcohol. And this was a bit of a problem because rugby games were often played on Sundays. And if you wanted to have some beer to watch the game, you had to remember to buy it the day before, or you had to drive out to a winery to pick up some wine. I know this because Nigel's brother and I did this one Sunday before the rugby. We drove out to a winery in West Auckland and bought some wine so that we could have some alcohol to watch the rugby. This is a long time ago now. This is about 12 years ago or so, I suppose, maybe even longer. The law has since changed, and you can buy beer and wine and spirits even, I believe, on Sundays. Although I don't know about spirits, maybe not. Spirits are, you know, like whiskey and vodka and things like that. In the area where we live, it used to be governed by a licensing trust, which means it controls the liquor licenses in this area. And they banned sales anywhere except at their own store, which was, it's called a bottle shop. A liquor store is called a bottle shop. And they used to have a pub, but that closed down many years ago. And so that was the only place in this area where you could buy alcohol. If you drove outside of the trust's zone, then you could. At supermarkets is what I meant to say. Beer and wine is available in supermarkets. Spirits are not. Well, there was a referendum a while back, and the voters voted to close down the trust, or to take away its monopoly, I should say. And so now, even in our area, we've got two supermarkets within the trust zone, two or three, I'm not sure. And they all now sell beer and wine, which is where we get ours. And that was a bit of a change. But in the time that I've been in New Zealand, there was a time when you couldn't buy any alcohol on a Sunday in a store. So now, going back to Roger Green's comment, he said, "I'm still listening to this, but must say that I'm enjoying it far more than the first Pride 48 go-around, which seemed less focused, let's say. If you can read my mind, I remember as a big hit for Gordon Lightfoot when I was in high school, 1971, and he's got a Wikipedia link. See, I wasn't familiar with Viola Wills, who unfortunately died a couple months ago, and has a link to that as well. And yes, we actually knew that Viola Wills had died, because I remember we were talking about it at the time. But now over on the comments for Sunday, First up was Archer, who said, "So glad you recorded these two shows. I didn't want to miss them, but couldn't get up so early to listen live. It was great hearing Nigel on both shows. It was fun hearing him talk about various things. I love his voice and his accent. Love you too, Arthur." Thank you for posting them. I really enjoyed hearing them. Well, thank you, Archer. And as I said, we did have a really good time doing it. And I always intended to record the shows because I knew that chances were good that no one would be up that early or that late, depending on your point of view, to listen to it. And as it happens, there actually were a surprising number who were listening to both of them. I mean, surprising to me. It was about a dozen or so. I don't know. But I wasn't really expecting that many people to be up and listening at that time of the night. And so that's why I always intended on recording. But I didn't know until I think until we were done on Saturday that Nigel was willing to join me again on Sunday. But as I said, next time we do it, it is going to be at a time when North Americans will find it more convenient to listen live. And then Roger Green on Sunday's show says, "Nigel has an accent? I did not notice. Now, Arthur, he has an accent." Which is especially funny because longtime listeners will remember that the first few episodes of this podcast were taken up with comments by people arguing over whether or not I had an accent, and if so, what it was, and all this sort of stuff. So it's... those were the days. Next up was John Q. Public, who said, "Really enjoyed both these podcasts with Arthur and Nigel. You have a wonderful and sweet interaction. I'm sorry you didn't follow through with Nigel's version of your wedding. I would have loved to have heard about it from his point of view." You know, it's a funny thing about that because he didn't mention to me that he had this idea. If he had, we would have worked it in sooner. But he didn't mention it until the very end, and by then it was really too late. And finally was Kim Beaver, who said, "Haha, I just re-listened to your shows and enjoyed them very much again. Thanks for the link, Captain. You know you are my hero." Thank you, Kim. And thank you, everyone, for commenting on both of those two episodes. As I said, we will be doing them again. I just don't know when precisely. Almost everybody was nervous, but I was nervous as well for both shows, more the first one than the second one, because I didn't know for sure that the technology was going to work. I was nervous more about that than anything. Although the idea of talking live did intimidate me a bit, I think, because, well, I hadn't done it before on my own show. I'd done it I've been part of Archer Radio Group shows. I'd been part of Dubious Intent After Show. I think that's about it. And so I've been, you know, on live streaming things before, just not my own. And there's a bit of pressure that goes along with that. You know, like Nigel was saying on one of them, you know, keep the people entertained. Well, that's certainly part of it. And also trying not to do the sorts of things that I can edit out on a recorded podcast. I don't know, like smacking my mouth or something. I don't know. Usual sorts of things. But it was a little bit nerve-wracking. Not terribly much, but just enough. I think that the next time we do it, I'll find it easier. And I certainly learned a lot of things from this time, this experience. I learned, for instance, to have a list of things to talk about instead of just sort of winging it. It's interesting that Roger found Sundays to be more focused than Saturdays, because Saturdays we at least had some ideas of things to go over. For Sundays, I had absolutely nothing. I had nothing written down. And I wish I had, because certainly at the beginning it would have been a bit smoother. And certainly next time we will have at least a list of potential topics, whether we talk about them or not is a whole other issue. And toward that end, if there's specific things or non-specific things that you'd like to hear Nigel and me talk about, by all means, send them to me, and I'll put them in the box for that episode whenever it happens. And of course, always feel free to send any questions or suggestions to me that, you know, things you'd like to hear me talk about, because I'm always willing to talk about whatever people want me to talk about. Well, up within reason. I do have my image to protect, don't I? Well, there are certainly other things I could talk about today, but I don't think I will. I think I'm going to start to wrap up a bit. And one of the things about Pride 48 is it was actually longer than 48 hours. And part of the reason why it seemed longer was the after show. Now, I don't know how many of you actually stuck around to listen to it. I know that there were several people who said that it was like crack. They just couldn't walk away. But the after show went on for, it must have been 13 hours. I'm kidding. It just felt like it. It was about four hours, something like that, before they finally shut down the stream. And it got to be quite messy toward the end. Now, I listened to a lot of it, and I actually recorded it because I was out running an errand during most of the after show, and I listened to it later. And what I've done is I have taken those 3 hours or whatever that I've got and condensed it into 1 minute and 35 seconds to give you a flavor of what the after show was like. Now, I should say that there is language, and if you were offended by language, you may want to just skip over that. But right now, here's my special montage from the Pride 48 after show, and after that, I'll be back with a few closing comments.
Prime 48 2008 after show right now. I'm really drunk. You know what, though, Auntie Vera, as much as I adore you, and I really do, and I hate to admit that, and I'm only going to admit that on the after show, never on the real show, I swear to you. You know what, I just put up with 48 hours of live streaming chat. I'm allowed to have a few drinks, okay? Okay. Oh, Nigel. You know, Nigel has such a great accent. Arthur here, who doesn't have the balls to do it anyway.
Daniel, stop it.
Yeah. By the way, I wasn't trying to stir up shit. God, I am really drunk, aren't I? All right. Yeah. Thank you, Adam. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, you know what? That Blob song gets stuck in my head, and I find myself like whistling it, like when I'm feeding the cats and shit. And my husband's like, what the fuck? And I'm just like... Yeah, I'm just saying, that song gets stuck in your head.
I'm squirting.
So I posted a picture in the chat room, and it's the homemade onion rings and burgers that I just made while we were talking. So
it's arranged beautifully.
Thank you. It is. Those are homemade.
I can't decide between soup and salad or sandwich and salad tonight, though.
I suffer from know-it-allism. I want a spoon right now. I'm really drunk.
From Pride 48. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, my God. I am so fucking drunk.
Well, there you go. That's my homage to the Pride 48 after show. It also goes to show what a little creative editing can do. It can make anybody sound drunk and silly and foolish. Mind you, it helps if they are drunk and silly and foolish before you start. Sorry, Daniel. The featured performers in that clip were Daniel J. Brewer of Dubious Intent, and one of the main forces behind Pride 48, Adam and Maddie from The Adam and Maddie Show, and Adam was the other driving force, Matthew from Spanking B. Arthur and The Big Gay Sex Show, Miss West from Live It Up, and you could hear the giggles of Nessa from Stars and Tartan. Tim Cormel was also part of it at some stage during the recording, but not at obviously any of the clips that I used. And I was actually part of the after show at one stage, but in the part before this recording. And naturally, I didn't use any of my own stupid remarks because that would be stupid, wouldn't it? But it's all in fun. The whole thing was just a bunch of fun. And that's just a sampling of what the evening was like, if you will. But that is it for today. I will be back at some stage. I don't know if I'm going to have another podcast this week. But if not, I'll be back next week with another one. And there's also a Too Political next week. But that's it for today. I will talk to you soon. Have a great rest of the week. Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com. Or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.